Talk Back Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide.
Good morning. It's the 1st of May. Happy May Day to you. Good morning, John Lamb.
Good morning, Deb Tribe, and good morning, gardeners. What gardeners would give for an inch or two of rain?
When's it? We didn't have the Anzac Day break, did we?
No, slow, steady rain would be delicious.
It certainly would. And the man who can tell us when he predicts the next rainfall will be is our climatologist, Darren Ray. And he's been pretty much bang on the mark, hasn't he, in the last years, really, when you're looking back.
It's been quite remarkable how accurate he is. But later in the program, after we talk to Darren, we're going to have a little mini masterclass on citrus and internationally recognised citrus grower from the Riverland, Ian Tolley, comes to town every now and then, and when he does, he often rings up and says, "Hey John, I'm in town," so I say, "You can't go home before you give us another little mini masterclass on talkback gardening." So it'll be mainly citrus after Darren, but we'll see what happens.
That's right. So if you've got a citrus question and you'd like to get in the queue for the man I call Mr. Citrus, Ian Tolley, then please give us a call now. The number is 1300 222 891, 1300 222 891. We'll have Ian in the studio for as long as we can snaffle him with his expertise this morning. And I do have a May ABC Gardening Australia magazine to give away a little bit later in the program. The front cover is covered in beautiful pink roses. But right now, I think let's get to what we really want to find out. When will there be some rain?
Long before it does rain. Darren Ray is our climatologist. He provides a wonderful three-month weather outlook for home gardeners. And last month, he was suggesting that we'd be lucky to get 50% of our rainfall, and we certainly didn't. And he was saying it was going to be a little bit warmer than normal. So, good morning to you, Darren Ray.
Yeah, g'day, John. G'day, Deb, and to everyone listening out there.
Well, the issue, of course, is when will it rain? And again, I hark back to what you were saying last month. You were suggesting rather than good soaking rain and giving us a nice break in the season, keep an eye on the frontal systems, and it'll be the frontal systems increasing there in intensity and numbers is likely to give us a break. So give us an update as to where we are in terms of what's happening with a change in the season.
Yeah, it's been interesting, John. There's been a few different things going on with the ocean temperatures around northern Australia have been a bit warmer than average. So, you know, if the weather systems were able to pick up on that, that'd be great. But that's about the only thing that's been in our favour, unfortunately. The southern annular mode, just measure what the how far north the cold fronts are doing. That took went a little bit negative. So we had the cold fronts coming up a bit more strongly in the third week of April, so we picked up a little bit of rainfall out of that, and then it dived positive again, so which means the cold fronts are weakening off and staying further south, so that's not great. So that's inhibiting the rainfall. The Madden-Julie oscillation, which is the tropical activity, that strengthened during April, but in the wrong phase in terms of producing rainfall Australia. So it's actually been helping rainfall out in the Indian Ocean away from us and suppressing rainfall over us. So, you know, we've not been getting too many breaks in terms of things that could produce the rain. And the, we've just seen this, the ridge of high pressure being stronger than usual as well with all the highs over southern Australia. So,
well, could we
look at
I'm going to suggest it's that belt of high pressure that's there. And if you have a look at the weather models, there are fronts going across the bight. And one presumes, I can visualise a battle between the high-pressure ridge which is going across and the fronts coming in and towards South Australia, and the fronts, the high-pressure say, no, you can't come in. Do we have to have a change in those high pressure, that ridge of high pressure, or is it more likely that the high pressure ridge will move to the north, and if it does, in come the fronts?
Yeah, and that's kind of what the southern annular mode measures as. Yeah, and so that there's positive value to SAM. You can see in what the cold frontal how far north those cold frontal systems are moving. And I mean, the news for May is not great, because basically it's looking like we'll see a, you know, the modelling showing a very much stronger than average ridge of high pressure over southern Australia. So the cold front's being weaker and staying further south, and the southern annular mode is looking like it's going to stay very positive, or a bit positive through all the way through May. So it's not helping rainfall, and the only thing is, you know, there's a bit of some hints of some tropical activity coming through, moving across northern Australia in the second half of the month, and might actually help some feeds into whatever weather systems do pull themselves together. So if we are going to get
rain, you're suggesting our best bet is, say, mid-month or round about then?
Yeah, and through that second half of the month. So, you know, we've got we're seeing a pattern where, you know, it's looking like over the next sort of 10 days or so, we will see a little bit of a sequence of a few cold frontal systems coming through, but they're just really not going to have the moisture feeding in from the tropics, and so there's very little rain coming out of them. So if you look at the forecast of the next week, for instance, there's lots of possibility of rain, but the amounts are really small. So that's looking very much the case through the first half of the month, and then it picks up a little bit more, becomes a little bit more conducive for some rain from mid-month.
By the time we get to the end of May, will we get average or 50% of average, or even worse?
It's looking like we're probably end up around half the May average. So, you know, if we get 20, 30 millimetres, I think we'll sort of end up somewhere in there. There is right at the end of the weather forecasts, there is an interesting little system winding up in basically 2 weeks' time that has some possibilities for some moderate amounts of rain in it and a little bit of moisture in feed into that. So that's one to watch on Saturday, 2 weeks.
Interestingly, Deb had a text from a farmer suggesting, what was that date, May?
May 11.
May 11.
reliably told that would be the break in the season. So that's not really correlating with what you're saying, Darren.
Oh, it's not bad. You're suggesting that mid... You're saying it'll be a bit later than that, Darren.
And whether that's enough for a break, it could be a pretty quick moving system that moves through fairly quickly.
All right. So let's leave the rainfall alone for at least for this month and temperatures. What's happening there?
It's looking like it's going to stay fairly windy. So, the skies are, you know, we're seeing sort of enough. I think we'll see enough frequent cold frontal systems to be weak that it just keeps the winds up, and so not particularly cold. Like, I'm not seeing those sort of high pressure systems sitting over the top of Australia, over South Australia, you know, for long periods of time with lots of light winds. So it's not looking particularly frosty. At the same time, it's looking drier. So yeah.
Well, it's a little bit warmer for May, and certainly well down on rainfall. Could we venture into June? Could it be at that stage the battle between the fronts and the high pressure changes, or are we going to continue on as it is at the moment?
Looking at the modelling, they've got a weaker ridge of high pressure south of Australia, so that's good news. So that means the cold fronts, we're seeing the cold fronts coming up a bit more, as you typically see through this time of year, so that's good news.
Will we get average rainfall for June?
And the modelling has got more average rainfall for June, so that's good news. And I guess the thing at the moment we're starting to think about, so we've been mentioning there possibly that negative Indian Ocean dipole influence, and that's really, as we go through winter, that's what we're looking for, that to become more and more established. And it looks like it'll slowly make itself felt little bit by little bit as we go through winter, but and then really have its impact in spring in terms of the wetter and cooler conditions in spring. So the battle between these sort of this tendency towards a stronger than average ridge of high pressure and then that weakening off as you go through winter and the negative Indian Ocean dipole wetter, right, so, cool weather influence making itself felt.
The longer we leave it, the more likely we are to get some form of moisture, and by the time we get to late winter and early winter, perhaps we could see back to normal?
Yeah, if you're digging into the modelling, it does look like the first half of June could be a bit drier, and then we could see more frequent cold front activity in the second half. So I think the rainfall, as much like I say about June, is it does look like it's weighted towards the second half of the month for the rain.
All right, and temperatures?
And temperatures, it actually looks like a slightly warmer than average winter overall. So if you look through June, July, August, they're all tending to be a little bit above average for temperatures. For people looking for a break or a decent amount of rain, it really does look like it's going to be fairly bitsy for quite a while.
Yes. Okay, so it's not the news that I think that a lot of people were hoping to hear from you, Darren, but I mean, you can't make it rain. You can tell us how it's going to rain and when it's going to rain and if it's going to rain. And probably the thing to keep our eyes on will be the warm waters to the north. And as they move into the Indian Ocean, they produce that negative IOD that you're talking about. And if it happens, we could get some rainfall from that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm still seeing that in the modelling that in most of the modelling there, that warm waters move over from the Western Pacific around Northern Australia through winter and then leave us in the negative Indian Ocean dipole through spring, and the modelling still got quite wet conditions in September, October, November. And cooler than average temperatures, so that's still what I'm seeing at this stage for spring. So it's does look like there's some rain coming. It's just going to be a little while getting here, I think, unfortunately.
So for what we're about to receive, Darren Ray, lovely talking to you, and we look forward to the first Saturday of next month when perhaps you can bring the rain with your discussion. See you next month.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Dad.
Thanks, Darren. Darren Ray, our independent climatologist. And if you would like to hear that back again, we do podcast this hour of the Talkback Gardening program, the 9 until 10 hour. It will be available later this morning. But it sounds like, John, we need to keep the water up to our garden plants for quite some time ahead.
Now is not the time to put the watering systems away. Keep the hoses going. And if you care to, get a spade or a trowel and dig down 2 or 3 centimetres, and you'll find it's bone dry unless you've been watering the garden. And that has very significant effect on trees and shrubs, and particularly fruit trees. And we might pop a question to Ian Tully about the effect of dry weather, dry autumn weather on our fruit trees and the implications of that for next season.
Yes. Ian Tolley is coming up next, our international citrus expert based in the Riverland, but here in the studio to answer your citrus questions. The number to call is 1300 222 891.
Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide.
Adelaide gardeners love their citrus, and they get a lot of enjoyment out of the fruit that it produces. But it also, there are problems, and invariably we get questions about, my citrus tree has got yellow leaves. What's gone wrong? And somebody who can give us an answer to those questions is Ian Tolley, Riverland citrus grower, who is in town at the moment, and every time he comes here I like to borrow him. And last time Ian was giving us a little masterclass on citrus trees in containers, and I think the message there was to match the size of the tree with your container, or more importantly, the container to your tree. But this morning we're going to talk about leaves going yellow. So good morning, Ian Tolley.
Good morning, John Lamb, and good morning, Debbie.
Could I put it to you, because you get the same kind of questions that I do. My citrus tree is not looking too good. The leaves are going yellow. Now, when somebody asks you and sort of says, my leaves are going yellow, before you give them an answer, you interrogate them. And what I'd like you to do is tell us, what are the questions that you ask, interrogate them, what are the key issues, and why?
I'm just beginning to worry about you, John Lamb, because yesterday I happened to be confronted with a series of citrus trees in pots, and they're all set up as if you'd sort of formed them and put them in front of me and said, this is what we're going to talk about tomorrow.
It wasn't me.
It was all about yellow leaves right to the very top of them, some of them 5 feet high
all
in
right.
pots.
So somebody says, you know, my tree, the leaves are gone yellow. And you sort of say, look, I'm not going to answer you straight up. I'm going to ask you some questions.
Yes. Well, I did to the particular people. So, and it's so timely. So let's go from there. These were in pots, as I said, and they'd grown very well, but it's a tall, narrow pot, so very little room to put fertiliser in, and so they've just been watering to keep them going, but they've run out of food because they've been so vigorous, and so they got a bit yellow, but then the tree's mechanism plugged in and said, oh, this must be winter, so we'll start withdrawing the nutrients from the leaves and keep it in our roots and in our hardwood so that when spring comes, then we'll be all ready. Only trouble was that there was such a big loss of that these trees were yellow to the very top. And there's two kinds of yellow, because at the bottom of the trees, you will often see in containers large leaves where you put fertiliser when you planted the tree and everything's fine. And then as it goes on and you don't quite get to that monthly fertilising, the leaf size starts to drop down and drop down. And so they're at the end of the tree. And then the old leaves start to get old, and they can be old in 6 months, even 6 months, often 12 months. But you need an old tree to have leaves that are 2 or 3 years old. So here we have these bleached yellow leaves at the bottom, ready to drop off, of no use and value to the tree whatsoever, and then the rest of the tree looking yellow and going into winter, and not a lot of chance at this stage because we've just missed a major root development. This has been going on for the last 2 months. No sign of it on top. Trees just look quiet. Root activity frenetic, and it's just about to stop. So now put fertiliser on. You're putting it in a bank balance, waiting for the spring or for when the root spring comes. And I want to differentiate between what you see on the top and what the roots are doing. And they're totally different. They don't even relate. Oh, I see the top of the tree shooting, so I must put fertiliser on. Wrong, because there's probably no root development whatsoever. It's all occurred the month or two before.
So it's what's happening in the root system that's the key to the answer of whether it's green or whether it's yellow.
Yeah.
Let's take a look. So you say it's the older leaves to start with. They'll be the first ones. The older leaves at the base of the plant,
yes,
they'll start to go yellow, and it gradually works its way up, and the further up it gets, obviously, the more the problem.
Yes, and it shows you in stark contrast, oh dear, I forgot to fertilise these trees and give them feeding. And so how far those yellow leaves keep going up the tree is a measure of what you didn't do with fertilising way back.
So we'll come back to fertilising in a second. But as you mentioned earlier on, there's different kinds of yellow.
Yes.
So there's the leaves going yellow all over, a nice even yellowness. Mm. But there is also what I call the streaky yellows, where you find that the leaves go yellow except for the veins. The veins are still green and round it is yellow. Could we work into that one?
John Lamb, you said forget the fertilising for the moment, but you shouldn't have said that because that's showing signs of manganese deficiency, and the lack of fertiliser has induced that. But I can always see manganese deficiency at this time of the year, and when spring comes, if you've been fertilising regularly, it disappears.
It's gone.
So it's just gone. Very seldom can you find manganese deficiency in late spring.
Again, may I interrupt? Because you have your leaves and the veins are green, and in between it's yellow, and most people will say, oh, that's iron deficiency.
No, never. Never, never, never. You don't have iron deficiency with green veins in it. Iron deficiency is more a whitish shade of green and all over the leaf. And one of the things that we have to do is to remember that iron is leached as easily as nitrogen from the pot.
From the soil, right.
And you can wash it out and get iron deficiency because you've washed it out, not because of anything else, not because of the potting mix, just because it's so soluble. And we came to this conclusion about 20 or 30 years ago when I was doing research with CSIRO on that. And so when we started to make up potting media, we started to work out a whole range of systems to try and incorporate as much iron as we could, not to get to a toxic level, but to have ample iron, because we were measuring leaching all the time.
All right.
So we mustn't forget that.
We have very alkaline soils here in Adelaide and beyond, and if you've got alkaline soils, it tends to sort of grab hold of the iron and it's not available. Is putting on iron chelates on the foliage more effective than putting them on, trying to put the iron in through the root system?
This is where you've got to think about the fact that from a biological point of view, the biota can handle iron much, much better than the leaves can. And so that conversion and uptake of iron generally comes from the roots. And that's why you need to have in your potting media, and we're talking containers, you need to have it in the potting media, and then your biological activity, your fungi, your bacteria, all of this happens, they convert it, and they've done a deal with the top of the plant and said, look, you can photosynthesize, you can produce chlorophyll, and you can produce sugar, but you haven't got a hope in hell of producing all these other elements, and if you don't put them in the container, then you don't have a balance, and the tree says,
We're talking with Ian Tolley, wonderful gardener, wonderful citrus grower, has been very influential in the kind of varieties of citrus we now have in Australia because of his wonderful selection program. But he's got a font of knowledge, and we're chatting about yellow leaves on citrus. And I think, Deb, it's probably time for people to come in with their questions.
I think so. We've got a lot of questions for Ian Tolley right now. So let's start with Maggie, who's in Norwood. Maggie, Ian's here and he's listening.
Good morning, John, Deb and Ian.
Good morning, Maggie.
Good morning. I've been just listening to that very interesting last section. It might apply to my question. I've got a six-year-old Eureka lemon tree, and before I understood anything about lemon tree roots, I planted a whole lot of Spraxis bulbs underneath, and then I found out you're not supposed to plant anything under a lemon tree. So I just wanted to ask you, I've started to get them out, but I'm worried I'm interfering with the roots too much, because they have sort of bulbs a bit like an oxalis. There's lots of little white bulbs down there, so I'm just wondering, should I leave it, should I cover them? I've tried cover them with a geotextile, like a weed mat, but that was no use. Should I cover them with newspaper and mulch, or should I try and get them out? What would you suggest?
You know, there's some useful little tools, like a probe, a curved blade with a hook on the end of it, not too sharp, and you can sort of dig it into the soil in the shallowness and feel where these knobs of bulbs are, and do what you can to get as many as you possibly can out, and that every time from then on that you see them shooting again, just pull them, because they have to go through their cycle, produce leaves, produce flowers, and that builds the bulb and they can grow on. But if you deny them that, they'll shrink away and disappear. So eventually you'll get a winning thing on that. But you know, mulching underneath, directly underneath a deep canopy isn't terribly helpful. The real place to be mulching under citrus trees is at the big, sort of halfway out from the stem to the canopy surface, and then well out past the canopy surface, because that's where the majority of the roots are heading. And I've just written a little one-pager that I'm going to get published in the Rare Fruit Society of SA on using a soil probe. That probe will tell you where the moisture is, therefore you can put the moisture where the roots are. And I ended it with, don't forget, if you plant a citrus tree in good soil, in the second year the roots will be 4 metres away from the stem. And I hope it shocks people to understand that, sure, because 9 out of 10 people, when I ask them kindly with the questioning that you quite rightly raised, John, where do the roots go? And 90% of them say, oh, under the canopy surface, as far out as that. I remember digging trenches to putting sprinklers a long, long time ago on three-year-old trees, and the roots that were crossing the row were thicker than my thumb, and I used to dig and follow, and those roots were right into the next row, 7 metres across, so it's 3.6 metres away. So the roots were more than 7 metres long.
Now, on that particular, I presume that's Maggie's
thanks,
answer.
Thanks, Maggie, yes,
yeah, because
thank you.
I just follow up on that one, because we reverse that situation. You're saying citrus, it can have a very extensive root system going out.
Mm.
Now, many people have their garden and they've got a tree growing in their garden, an ornamental tree, and it's probably 2 or 3 metres away from the citrus. You plant your citrus and people will say, look, I've planted my citrus and it's not growing. And I say, how far away is the tree? They'll say, oh, it's 3 or 4 metres. Could it be? It's the competition from the tree that's actually preventing the citrus from growing when it gets going.
I'll go further than that. I had a gardener whom I love dearly, and she said, look, I'm really in trouble with my front garden. I've tried and tried, and she was really desperate, so I went and visited. And sure enough, her description was right. And I said, let's have a look at your backyard. And she sort of looked at me as if you're not going to concentrate on my problem, which is my front garden. So we went around the back, and she had a red gum that was about 60 or 80 feet tall, and you could just put your arm around the butt. And so I said, oh, we've got the solution to your problem now. The front garden's full of roots. And she looked at me and said, right, he's really gone off. I said, let's dig a little while. And so while we're in the backyard, she had her shovel ready. I dug a couple of eucalypt roots so she could understand what a eucalypt root looked like. And we went round the back, around the front. Within minutes, we're picking up eucalypt roots everywhere. And the house is probably 100 feet.
And that's very important.
Looking for water.
And I believe that that's probably the answer to a lot of people's problem. They have planted a lemon tree in their front garden, and they've also got trees growing in the front garden, and it's the competition from the tree. Mm. So is there a quick solution? Can you do a cut-off between the tree?
No, because roots have an insatiable desire to get water, and they can sense it. And if you irrigate, then they'll be back again next minute. The thing, you know, I go on about, and I know I get smiles sometimes. I say, look, you have to fertilise monthly, every month of the year. But wintertime, nothing's happening. Well, I think I've explained that earlier about when roots grow and when they don't. But if you do it monthly, you're refilling the bank balance of food and close to the major part of the root system, outside the canopy surface area, a little bit under, and make sure that that gets the first load of fertiliser as it gets leached through with watering and so forth.
Yeah. Listen,
and you've just got to balance that.
I create a diversion. I shouldn't have done that because it's yellow leaves and the people's questions that we've got.
Oh, there are.
Back to the question.
Thank you. Look, we have got so many questions. We've got Tony, Michael and many others waiting to speak to our international citrus expert, Ian Tolley. He's here in the studio. We'll come to those questions in just a moment.
Talk Back Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide.
Ian Tolley is our international citrus expert here in the studio, answering your citrus questions this morning. Tony from South Brighton joins us. Tony, what's your problem?
Good morning, Deb, John and Ian. I'm seeing the vegetable garden problems I have with our lemon and mandarin trees. Both trees put on a great deal of growth during the summer, and they have pruned the excessive growth with a view to reducing the size. They've been watered every week using a sprinkler at the end of a hose for about 40 minutes a tree. They've also been fertilized the last time at the end of March. The lemon has plenty of fruit, but the early crop had a brown heart. The current crop are some which are okay and some with a brown heart. It's like a rot in the center of the fruit. I'd like to know what the cause is and how that can be fixed. With the mandarin, it's a bit more of a problem. Some 15 years ago, at the bark at the base of the mandarin was coming away from the tree, and I was told it was probably a canker, and was suggested to put a poultice made of copper oxychloride and wrap with hessian cloth, which I did. This appeared to work, and we had a good crop on alternate years. Unfortunately, the same problem is now occurring on all the limbs. They're all sort of bark is coming away from nearly all the limbs on the tree.
Okay, well, there's the questions. I think there's two issues there, and we've got a lot to get through, Tony. So, Ian, there's two issues there. One is the fruit going brown in the centre. We'll do that first, and then we take a look at the canker around the tree, around the base of the tree.
Fruit that starts to deteriorate inside is generally a fungal disease, sometimes bacteria, but mostly fungal. It's a case of making sure that you've got good aeration around the tree, good hygiene in terms of the tree's condition. Don't let it get lots of scale. Don't let it get problems that will create difficulties for the plant, because when it's down and not quite out but still down, then they're very prey to the odd spores that float in the air, and then you get an infection which then develops in the fruit.
Would you put on a fungus like a copper spray?
I think it's rather shutting the door after the horse has bolted.
Yes, yes.
If it's going to be a repetitive thing every year, which is most unlikely, but if it does occur, then okay. At an earlier stage, after the fruit is set, what we used to be calling the December drop,
yes,
in January, February,
yes,
then you can start putting a fungicide on it. But I'd be loath to do that until I'd had enough time, a year or two, to see what the problem was, how it was resolving itself.
Yes.
If tree health is improved, often these things go away.
All right, so the canker around the trees.
That's a bad name to use, and definitely it's not a canker. It's called Phytophthora, and in South Australia it will be Phytophthora citrophthora, a mouthful. But if I described your scaling bark, it's parallel curling bark that's sort of like breaking into little segments of strips, and as they get older and drier, they curl away from the bark.
Oh, yes.
And it is Phytophthora. There is nothing you can do about it because it's an unsuitable rootstock that's sensitive to it. And these rootstocks we've abandoned for decades now, but there are still old trees around that have it, and it may take a lifetime before it happens.
Yes, you've done some wonderful breakthrough work on rootstocks for citrus, and if people could only get hold of your book on citrus. But anyway, so there's nothing that Tony can do. It may be sort of...
The copper doesn't do any good whatsoever. We did that for a decade, and then science came to our aid, and we found that it was completely ineffective. It's sort of like having a cut on your arm. I must put a bandage on, whereas it may not be the right way to do it. Yes. And in this case, I can say positively, treating it with copper, any of those root-borne diseases, is a waste of time.
Okay, so Tony, I think you need to buy yourself new citrus, and buying it from a reputable garden centre or authority that's buying or growing their or selling their trees on the proper rootstocks.
Yes, these days they would have rootstocks like Carrizo citrange, Trifoliata, yes, that sort of thing, which are resistant to Phytophthora, and you could put them back into the same place, providing you improve the nutrition at the site. And once you've done that, then these rootstocks are resistant, and so it wouldn't carry on.
Okay.
Thanks, Tony. A complex problem there. Michael in Victor Harbour, you've got three citrus trees in half wine barrels, and you've got an ant problem. Is that right?
Yes. Good morning, Deb, John and Ian. Yes, I've Ian, listening to your previously, I've managed to get my citrus in the barrels looking healthy now with the watering and feeding, but how do I control ants? Because I'm just beginning to get a few scale, sc- scale on there, and I don't want to use anything too heavy. What would you suggest?
Oh, look, definitely get a pad around the butt of the tree, just say 2 or 3 inches above that. Sticky pads, which are freely available at most of the garden centres, and stop the ants getting up. Because what's happening, they get up into your tree and then they fight the parasites that are there, the beneficial insects would want to feed on the scale or kill them or eat them. They won't allow that to happen. In fact, they milk the scale and encourage them to develop because they want that honeydew. So it's a bad cycle, but if you break that with a band around the butt of the tree and make sure, here's a trap, make sure that if you've got lower limbs that are rubbing on the tubs, that you do a little bit of judicious pruning around that to be absolutely clear so they can't, because I've seen them do that. They come up the outside limb and work their way that way when you've done something on the butt of the tree.
They're sneaky. Would you use an oil spray to get rid of the scale?
No, I'd wait and see what happens and settle. Yes. And get your little magnifying glass. It doesn't have to be very powerful. And have a look and see. You should see adult scale, because the ants will keep looking after them and they give them the greatest amount of honeydew. But every time they breathe, that little casing lifts up and they give birth to live young. And with a small magnifying glass, you should be able to see those live young. If there are a prolific number of live young, then yes, red scale can be controlled by using a beneficial pest oil, eco oil.
Yes, yeah.
It's soft, it oxidizes very quickly because you stop them from breathing. The film of oil goes over the young ones as well and they just shrivel up with the oil. Yeah. The old ones can't breathe and so you begin to get scale control.
Problem solved.
Thank you very much for the call, Michael. So many calls, we're moving through them as rapidly as we can. Bruce is in Yankalilla with a Washington navel, 5 years old, and it's showing signs of dieback, Bruce.
Yes, it is, Deb. Good morning. Good morning to Malcolm and Ian. Not Malcolm. John.
John and Ian, yes.
Yes. And this is in a half wine barrel. It's about 5 years old. I did have a scale on it a couple of months ago, which I did use white oil on, and it got rid of the ants as well. But the fruit is dropping off at the moment. As soon as it's starting to colour, the fruit is dropping off.
You've given me some clues on that. A five-year-old tree in a wine barrel, and if you've been successful, and I'm assuming that you've done well and you've enjoyed everything to date, you know, I'm beginning to think that you're entering a new era of people that are so happy and so successful that they then commit suicide at the end of it. And why do they do that? Because now the canopy surface area, the whole volume of the tree, is vastly in excess of the capacity of the root system to supply it. Now, if you are not fertilizing monthly on that now limited root system for a beautiful big top, then the tree is in all sorts of trouble. And I think that's what you have to do. Now, don't go out and prune now because it's going into winter. Wait until you see the first signs of shooting for spring. Just disregard and stop worrying about what you're seeing at the moment. Relax, have a cup of tea or a cup of coffee. Look to spring. Get out and reshape the tree back to a modest canopy, not to the same volume as the container. Of course, you can go to maybe twice as big, but no more than that, and keep it clear in the middle so there's lots of aeration, and that new growth, which is showing you that it's about to take off, will come in, and the flowers will come on the terminals of that new growth, so you'll get your setting of your crop. Now, if you have alternate cropping, then make sure that you never prune your tree immediately after a heavy crop. There will be no leaf fruiting terminals left for the following year.
Okay, Bruce, get that cup of tea and coffee and have a think about what Ian Tolley had to say. Thanks for the call, Bruce.
Ian gave a wonderful masterclass on that particular issue of matching the size of the canopy to the root system. Now, those of you that download podcasts, if you can go back to February the 6th, That was the last time Ian was here, February the 6th, and he did this wonderful masterclass on matching up the containers to the size of the canopy or vice versa. Brilliant. Well worth it. February the 6th was that podcast, and you can probably, if you don't, get into podcasts, and you can dial it up anyway from the
you
library.
You can get your child, your younger child who's born with an IT gene, and they'll be able to set it up.
That's right. And you can go online as well to ABC Radio Adelaide. Just go to episodes of the Saturday morning show and you'll find it there
as well. I've been downloading podcasts for the last 2 or 3 years, so they're just all on my iPhone, and you know, you just sort of go back to whatever it was.
And there they are.
Yeah, there's but that John, some of us take a little longer. Well, <I'm>, me included.
Well, I'm not, I would hardly sort of say I was very literate, but you know, I can podcast, and I've learnt to podcast because of the value. It's just brilliant.
It
you've
is.
Got this
yeah.
information, and you can go back to the experts, and that's the value of this program, is bringing in people like Ian Tollies, and we can just listen to them drill down to the information, and it's all there.
It is. Let's go to Norm in Brighton. Your navel's grown too big, Norm.
Naval yes, orange, it is, that is.
Yes, well, sorry, your well, naval well. Orange.
We'll change our view from you to the tree now.
Yeah, okay. Yes, it's somewhere about 4.5 to 5 metres tall and probably a bit over 3 metres wide. It's just got too big. Hmm. When can I bring it down, and how far can I bring it down, and how do I bring it down?
Oh, very easy. And again, you have a cup of coffee, a long cup of coffee, and wait until you start to see bud development over the tree. And you know that in your environment, in the way you've been growing it, you're in your microclimate there, and spring is about to come. At that stage, you can get your power saw, hand saw, whatever. And I would be going down to around about 2 metres, and just behead the tree, go right through from side to side, cutting everything in its path until the tree is only about 2 metres tall. You're going to have a potential, if we ever get our strong summer sun, to sunburn. So if there are any big limbs that are now exposed, now's the time before they start shooting to paint it with white paint to stop any sunburn.
Okay.
Then, on that basis, you can thin out any little bits of dead twigs and so forth that have been lost in the density of your tree. Skirt the outside edges. Just shorten them back till they're moderate, and these will become your fruiting areas while the top regrows. When the top starts to regrow and you see it getting to long shoots, maybe a metre long, then go up and prune with your snips down. Just snip it back to about, take 3/4 of it off, and the strong shoots or the stubs that are left have well-developed buds. They will put out a canopy straight away close to where you've been pruning and not up to the heights that you've just described.
Excellent, Norm. Thank you very much. Ian Tolley is our citrus expert. We will come back to more of your questions in just a moment. I do have an ABC Gardening Australia magazine to give away. If you haven't won anything from us in the last month, then you're certainly able to call through to get that. I'd love to know, though, what's on its cover. You can let Nick know. Call now 1300 222 891.
Talk Back Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide.
In the studio with us is Ian Tolley. Ian and John still talking whilst we are here. June from Edwardstown has won the magazine. Thank you very much, June. And they were beautiful pink roses on the cover of the ABC Gardening Australia magazine. Let's get some more of his expertise, Ian Tolley's expertise, whilst we can. Michael is in Hallett in the Mid-North. Now, you've got a question about citrus saplings, Michael.
Yes, I have 3 young citrus saplings and a whole bunch of other young saplings. I'm wondering how long can they handle no water?
Can you describe what you call saplings?
Sapling as in just planted out one lot last year. They're about 3 foot tall. A couple of orange trees there, 4 foot maybe.
Did you grow them from seed? Are these seedlings?
No, I bought them.
Oh, so they're budded trees, you think?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, one's got some, I mean, the mandarin's got small mandarins on it at the moment. I'm just out of water. I'm wondering how long can they go without water?
They're pretty tough and hardy, but how tall are they now? Just go over that again.
The orange tree saplings are literally maybe like 3.5, 4 foot. A few leaves. One of them's just sort of coping. The other one looks like it's, you know, growing new leaves and things. The lemon tree seems to be finally thriving. But I ran out of water about 4 days ago.
I would hedge them to about half their size, and that's going to reduce the transpiration rate with the half the leaves being there. The leaves will wilt that are left if it keeps on going and still short of water. Eventually the leaves will drop. If the leaves die and stick on the tree, that's a toxic matter, so that's not what you've got. What you've got is just a shortage of water. So the leaves will drop off. At that stage, the green in the stems of the plants will still photosynthesize and go into a dormancy phase, and they're pretty tough and hardy. I'm not suggesting that you keep them without water for the next 6 or 8 or 10 weeks, but they will last for quite a long time.
But Ian, on that particular issue, a lot of people have got gardens, they're running out of water, and the concept of pruning, hard pruning, removing some of the foliage is a way of salvation, isn't it? Keeping the plant going.
Yes, absolutely. And it's on an on-hold basis, and you can do this with almost any plant.
That's right, yes.
Michael, sorry to hear about that loss of water, but thank you very much for the call. Thank you for everybody's calls. I know that John wants to grab Ian for a few minutes before we finish up, but I'd just like to read out Jono's text to you, Ian Tolley. It says, a lifetime of citrus information in just half an hour. Thank you.
But you're talking about lifetimes of information. A lot of it is in a book, and it's Citrus. The name of the book is your book.
Oh, Common Sense Citrus.
Common Sense Citrus. What a lovely name for a citrus book on citrus. And it's available online.
Yes, it is. And you can look that up on our website, but Open Book Howden in Adelaide produce it for me, and they have it in stock.
So yeah, but Common Sense Citrus, it is a wonderful reference book. You can just work your way through it, and if you love your citrus, you'll find lots of answers there. But we come back to some issues, and I suppose one, it's the dryness out there, and knowing just how dry it is. And you mentioned a topic earlier on, probes. Just quickly, tell us about
very
what is
quickly
a probe and how valuable it is at this time of the year.
I have no faith in fixed electrical probes put in the garden says your garden is wet, dry, or whatever.
They don't work.
I hate them.
Go ahead.
So about 40 years ago, long before these modern apparitions turned up and told you, trust me, then I made a piece of 3/8 rod, 10 millimetres or thereabouts. Let me talk inches. 3/8 rod. It's about a little less than a metre long. A piece of handle welded on the top. It's water pipe, just the width of your two hands together. You weld the rod into the centre of the bottom part of that, and you put 10 centimetre marks up the rod.
Yes.
So when you've watered, the moment you start watering, you can't put that probe into dry soil. You push it, but it's very firm, so give it away. You water for a certain amount of time. You can push it through the moist soil, mark it, pull it up, say, for half an hour I got down that depth. I want to get down to this depth, therefore I need so many more minutes. And you can do that anywhere in the garden, any time. It'll tell you precisely how far the water gets down in your soil. I don't care, sand, clay, whatever. The probe doesn't differentiate. It's just easier to put the probe through wet soil.
Sadly, a lot of the soils are now bone dry. We've just run out of moisture. There might be a bit of moisture from a shower, and that's going to evaporate very, very quickly. So it's bone dry. Just very briefly, the fact that it's a time when trees, citrus trees in particular, should be storing energy for next spring. There's no moisture for the roots to operate, and also the little microorganisms, there's an explosion of them should be round about now, but there's no moisture for them to gobble up the leaves and create the what goes on in winter. Is there an answer?
The tree has a passionate desire to produce fruit, which is seed, and perpetuate. But it also has an even more passionate desire to survive. So when that mechanism starts to go inside the tree, then it'll start to concentrate on doing the essentials within the tree activity, not showing anything outside of the tree. And if you reduce down the canopy surface, there's still enough photosynthesis, enough sugar, and enough chlorophyll to keep the biota happy to do the conversions. And so this cycle just keeps on going, but at a slower rate.
So it slows itself down, but it will affect next year's crop, obviously.
There won't be next year's crop because it's into survival mode.
Yeah.
And that's what happens.
Ian Tolley, goodness gracious, there's so many issues I still haven't talked to you about, my questions, let alone everybody else's questions. So next time you come to Adelaide, please let us know.
Okay.
And, thank you very much.
It's always a pleasure to be on the ABC and with Debbie and ex-Ren Markey
yes.
and starting her life and John Lamb at the same time. He started there too, and someone rang up and they said, look, John, when you get to Renmo, go and see Ian Tolley and he'll put you straight. That's why he's the funny character he is now. I take full responsibility.
You're still putting him straight on this very day.
Listen, Mum's Day next week, so visit a garden centre and buy Mum a nice present and one for yourself, a nice wow plant maybe. And I'll say until next week, good gardening.